R-rated, too.
Exactly. I don't feel the R-ratedness.
You'll feel the R-ratedness
in
that?
I do not feel the R-ratedness in
that.
Okay,
at least
GP-13. There you go. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Life with the Girlfriends with Christine Marie and Julie.
Hi, I'm Christine Marie. I'm the mama.
And soon to be a second Nona.
Tomorrow I'm going to be Nona number two.
That's another
little girl. First we have Lillian, Paris, and now this one is going to be Pippa.
Yeah,
Pippa Marie.
I love it. And it's so much fun because, you know, the first time around, it was sort of like more anxiety, I think.
Yes.
Just because she was coming a little soon.
about 2.5 months soon.
Yeah. And this one's like on time, and there's a date given, and
yes. It's
like no anxiety, no stress.
Yes.
It's just like so much fun,
yes.
And it's just sweet.
It's just
a sweet experience.
Nice feeling, like yay.
Exactly.
Rather than, you know, just like, how long is it going to, you know.
What's going on?
Yeah.
And what's going on now?
So it's a whole different experience. So I will be Nona, which is an Italian for grandma.
Right.
Number two.
Well, it's funny because your husband, my dad, the grandfather, does not, you know, is not Italian necessarily, but we've called him now Nono.
That's right. And Lillian calls him Ono.
Ono.
Like, oh no. Oh no. No.
Like, oh no. What's
Ono
doing? Yes. Exactly. And so it's very much fun. But so we like to bring in lots of fun stuff to our lovelies and Life with the Girlfriends here. And I want to say that tonight's interviews are no different. And I want
I
you guys to just think that tonight's really about success, I feel. Success in business, success in leadership, success in speaking, which I will confess I need improvements on.
Oh, yeah.
We all do, don't we?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. This guy is so cool, Mr. Bob Huey. He's cool. He's, he's everything I would like to be.
Yes,
you know?
I understand that.
I can remember running for president in high school, you know, mm-hmm. And we had to give a speech in front of the whole high school. And I don't know why, but it was like we did it, it was, you know, as in like an altar, the altar, like where the priest stands, and I had my little speech. And I was just shaking in my boots. And what I had done was I had memorized the entire speech. I had memorized it.
Oh, funny.
So there was nothing at all, you know, novel, organic about it. I was just doing this, you know.
Yes.
And I'm, you know, to this day, I still have, like, nightmares about it, you know. Public speaking, oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
you know?
And you had a goal in mind. You're running for class president, correct?
Yes.
Yes. Well, first of all, I want to say a good hello out there.
Running for past president, yeah.
Yes, exactly. I love it.
And
that voice out there, I'm gonna give props right
Let's
now.
Let's give it to him.
To Canadian Idea Man. I love that. Bob Huey, he's a prolific creative author of many businesses, leadership, and career development books, 4 success systems, 4 pocket wisdom books, 6 e-books, 8 mini books so far. He's a freaking contributor and columnist. I mean, he's a speaker, a leadership speaker, a sales speaker. He's just an all-around success guy.
Bob, I'm tired already just hearing this. How do you do it?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Not
it's
bad for a guy in his 20s,
right?
Eh? Yeah. Not bad for a young guy like me.
That's exactly right. That's the story, and we're sticking to it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask you about that a little bit later about how you do it, because so many authors, and I don't want to get the cat out of the bag, but so many authors have a trouble getting their first book published. It's inside of them. But I look at you and your whole group of books and what you do for your life and what you contribute, and I'm like, okay, I'm putting him in my mastermind group right now, my virtual one.
Yes.
Because I'm like, he's going to be my...
I already put him in my virtual mastermind group.
All right, Bob. Can you be in 2 virtual mastermind groups at one time? I don't know.
Well, as long as you don't schedule them at the same time, we're probably okay.
Well, since it's all virtual,
otherwise I'll be
beside
myself.
You didn't realize it.
Yeah, see, we have our own virtual mastermind group, so we never have to bother the people. They just, like, you know, we visualize them coming to our mastermind group and speaking to us and motivating us.
Exactly. So I'm gonna ask you this first, Bob. And you've got a couple of different websites, so I want to tell people where to go first, because the book that we're going to focus on tonight is Speaking for Success, the 7th edition, and it's adding mastery to your message and power to your presentation. Now, I just love that, because I want to know what's the difference between a good presentator, presentator, is that a good word? A good speaker?
Potentially, is that like a dictator?
Exactly.
A
dictator or a presentator, yeah.
and an excellent one. And so I want to know more about that. But, you know, so first off, here you are, Speaking for Success, 7th edition. Where did you come up with getting there, the ideas, more ideas for the 7th edition?
Well, I think part of that has just been part of what drives me is trying to do things a little different and keeping busy, and like you were referring to the fact that I've written a lot. I think part of that is I hate to be bored. I hate to sit around and just do nothing. So, and the funny thing, the really interesting thing about the writing part is that was never on my radar. I mean, amazingly enough, I never set out to be a writer. I did actually seek to be a speaker. I joined Toastmasters, 23 years ago, with the idea that someday I would be doing what I'm doing, which is traveling the world and encouraging people and kicking their butts virtually and verbally, and trying to tell them, hey, if I can do it, you can do it. What's your excuse, you know? But somewhere along the line, I started writing, and what really surprised me is people liked it. And they bought it, and they took it home. And so I just kept allowing myself to explore that side of my business, you know, and keep sharing what I'm learning.
Do you think that your writing style is very similar to your speaking style?
Yeah, it's actually very similar. I think that's one of the things that made it easier for me is when I speak, for example, I'm very conversational. Mm-hmm. And when I'm writing, again, the same idea. I'm just simply writing as though you and I are talking. I simply share it. I mean, granted, you structure it differently, and then you go back and edit it and do all that kind of fun stuff. But eventually, you just basically find a style that works for you, and it works. I mean, the fun thing is I sit down and I spend the time. We just actually had I belong to the Canadian Association of Professional Speakers, and I'm the past president for the chapter here in Edmonton, Alberta. We had a meeting yesterday where we had a publisher's panel, and there was myself, and there was a lady who was an editor, and there was a lady who was a graphic designer. They were on the panel. And that's part of what I told people. I said part of this was somewhere along the line something clicked for me, and I started becoming disciplined, which is different than the discipline that I got most of my life when I was younger. And the people in the room laughed because they got that change in word. But I actually started seeing the value in saying, okay, I need to sit down and do something. Like with the writing, for example, if I've got a project, I will actually get up in the morning and come into the office, and I will sit down, and I will open the Word document, and I will brain dump some things. And then I'll come back later and evaluate and edit and those kinds of things. But and a lot of that came from the same kind of mentality and mental skill that came from putting a speech together. I mean, if you think about it, when you're giving a presentation, a little different than when you did when you were running for class president, you were probably, the reason you were so nervous is because you were thinking about you being up on stage and all those kids looking at you and all those kinds of things. One of the things I tell people is the first thing you do is you think about the audience. You put yourself in their shoes, and I tell people that. I ask myself when I'm putting a presentation together, why would I want to listen? What would I want to get out of this? And I put the focus on them, which takes the pressure off me and makes it easier to deliver. But I actually do my homework. And I think you mentioned the difference between a good presenter and a bad presenter, or a good presenter and a great presenter, is the great presenters are great people who put the homework in. I think that's really the difference, is they spend the time to think about, okay, who's in the audience? How can I help them? What can I give them that's good, solid value for them? And that makes a big difference.
Remember Bob, do you remember, like, years and years ago by the Brady Bunch when one of them was trying to give a speech, and they said, you have to just remember and visualize the audience in their underwear.
Yeah, I try not to do that, especially if I'm speaking to women's groups. That would get me in trouble. But, you know, it's like I told my wife. I said, you know, I'm on a radio show tonight, and they got 12,000 lovelies, as the ladies refer to them, and she just smiled. But you know, yeah, actually,
that,
no, I don't. I imagine them thinking I'm in my underwear. No, I don't do that either. But I think the biggest thing there is imagine them getting some value. And I tell this to people who are just getting going on speaking. I say, imagine there's at least one person in that audience that desperately needs to hear your message. Because lots of times that's true. And sometimes you're even lucky enough to find out somebody will come up and tell you. Or years later, I've actually had that happen. Years later, somebody comes up and said, you know, when you were speaking at such and such a group, I was going through a tough time in my life. Or I was at a point where I need to make a decision. And you gave me the inspiration or the courage to do it. And I thought, great. The other thing that I think is sometimes very funny is people come up and, you know, and tell me, you know, I really loved it when you said this. And I'm going, I don't remember saying that. Sometimes they hear things I don't say, and it's better than what I say. And I think some of that is the same thing. If you were, like, for example, if you're going to an art gallery, nobody sees the same picture because we all interpret it the way we see it. And I think that's the same thing when we're given a presentation. Sometimes people hear things that they need to hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, Bob, I love seeing, you know, Bob Hooey with the picture as an 18-year-old boy wrestling the Bengal tiger. and I love, you know, when I was a little kid, I loved Have Gun Will Travel. My dad used to, that was required TV watching when I was a kid. And I used to go, oh my God, how does he pay $1,000? You know, to have Paladin, you know, come.
Yeah.
So how does that little boy and the guy that wrestled the Bengal tiger, how did he become, you know, Bob Hooey, like this cool dude that flies everywhere and is motivational, inspirational, influential? How did that happen?
Actually, the truth behind the story is by accident. It sounds silly to say that, but I used to make women happy for a living, and their husbands paid me for it. actually, the truth was, I used to design kitchens way back when.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I wanted to know more about that. What's that about?
Yeah, exactly. And when I did that, I would make women happy because I would design the kitchen of their dreams. And in those days, a lot of times, the women were still allowed to, you know, they were still able to be at home and not have to go out to work to pay for things.
Right,
as things changed,
right.
As they get older, it was a little tougher because then people were both working. But I started doing programs back when I was designing kitchens in the showroom, just as a way of getting the word out to say, hey, here's something. And inevitably, every time we would have a small little workshop, if you want to call it that, inevitably I'd have one or two couples that would come up to me afterwards and say, you know, I realize there's actually more to this than meets the eye. Could you help us with this? And, of course, I'd be gracious and go, absolutely, that's why I'm doing this. And, you know, so every time I spoke, it paid off in the long run.
Wow.
And I started doing programs for our association, the National Kitchen and Bath Association. I started doing programs for our chapters because they would bring in a speaker every month, that type of thing. So I would do other chapters, especially in the U.S. I do quite a few of them. And from there, it just evolved. People who were in the building industry would say, could you come speak to our carpet association or our door manufacturers association? And pretty soon, it became totally unrelated to the building industry. And at that point, I eventually had to make a decision. I'd go, do I stay in this industry and speak part-time, or do I make the leap of faith going, maybe I can make a living at this and go into it full-time? And I did that back in the late 90s, and it's been an interesting ride.
You bet.
I like what you say about your story here, because we talk about this, Christine Marie and I talk about sometimes you're just in this flow of energy
that you just have to keep saying
yes.
Yes,
keep saying yes.
And even if you're not thinking, well, this is not the path I had chosen, but this is the path that's kind of coming to
me. It's like the doors that are opening to me.
Yes, and they may look small in the beginning. You know, you didn't get asked to speak in front of 30,000 people or 3,200 people right in the beginning, but you were able to talk about what you knew. And then all along building the success that you needed to talk about the thing that you've figured out how to do, which is talk in front of people and inspire people. So I want to just talk a little bit about that real quick.
Yeah. Can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure,
Ma. Have you ever done, like, the cruises, speaking in cruises?
Actually, I haven't. It's on my list.
You should.
My wife and I were on a cruise in January.
Yeah. I bet your wife would love that.
And I loved it. And I just have to think about maybe some of my topics that would fit with the kinds of stuff that they're looking for. Like,
obviously, they're not
looking for the business.
If Life with the Girlfriends ever had a cruise, and we would definitely invite you to speak to the lovelies.
Well, why don't we have one?
Let's
just put it out there and let's say yes.
Let's just say it. I mean, I'll just put it out there.
I'll have to all the stuff, but
you know,
that sounds awesome.
When I was reading the little note that you sent that, you know, this is going out today to about 12,000 people. Why don't we have one?
I think we should. I would love that.
I would love that.
See, that's the whole point of having an idea at work. You know, it comes up, you go, that makes sense, let's do it.
Yeah,
I love it. And so now I got to think about...
Okay, ladies.
Just ask
all the ladies on the line or listening to this, how many of you would like to come on a cruise and we'll spend some time together?
Yay!
Email us and talk to us.
Yes.
Let Christy, Marie, and Julie know, and we'll put it together.
Just put cruise in the
subject line.
Topic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I love it. And then I will figure out how to be on a boat for that long. And other patches, like seasick patches? I don't know.
Oh, yeah. No, it's fun.
Oh, good.
It's fun. I love cruising. I just haven't had a chance. But I'll give you a quick story where sometimes doing the ask like this makes a difference. I was speaking a number of years ago. I was speaking at the Rotary, had a leadership institute, and they hired me to come in to speak to all their leaders from across Canada and part of the U.S. And I noticed on the tagline that they had some people coming from Far Eastern Russia. So I said to my wife, I said, I've always wanted to go to Russia. And so I literally, in the middle of my speech, I said, I understand there's some people here from Russia. Who are they? Or who are you? And a couple of hands went up. And I said, I just looked at them and said, you know, can I talk to you later? Because I've always wanted to come and speak in your country.
Mm.
And long story short, we got chatting. They went home. They talked to their district governor. And he said, okay, we'll raise the $5,000, bring him. And I had just such an amazing time in Vladivostok. I spent 8 days there. With them and playing tourists and stuff, simply because I had the...
Yeah. You had the balls to ask them.
I just simply asked. The worst that can happen is people say no.
That gives me goosebumps. Yeah.
Yeah. The worst that can happen is people say no. So, you know, let me know when we're going to put the cruise together and we'll make it happen.
Yes.
You are the idea man. You really are.
Absolutely. And I can tap you into some other people that can come along.
I know. Well, I just want to ask you about this because, you know, what do you think when people are starting to speak? Because there are, just like authors, there's that story in everyone and all of us that wants to come out. And there's also people who go, you know, I know I can speak in front of people. I want to motivate. I want to inspire. I want to help people. What's their biggest hurdle, do you think?
The biggest fear?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think for a lot of people, their biggest fear is getting up there and looking foolish, or getting up there like you were doing when you were doing your presidential thing. And I'm impressed that you would memorize your speech because that would scare the heck out of me. Just because I'm serious, because a lot of times if you get up and you memorized it and you miss it, then what do you do? But but I think there's a lot of things that you can do that make a difference, and part of that is as I tell people, for me, the hardest part of my job is what I do before I walk on stage or before I walk up to the front, is the homework. One, understanding the audience. Two, looking at what I have to bring to them and making sure that I understand it's bringing good, solid, relevant value. And three, organizing it in a way that makes sense and is interesting. Because, I mean, even though you may have... great ideas, if you don't deliver it in a way that's interesting, people are going to tune out. And so part of that again keeps going back to that same point of saying, what's in it for the audience? Mm-hmm. It's like what you're doing with your radio show in terms of trying to make sure you find people that would be of interest to the ladies who are going to invest the half hour listening to you.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And you know, talking back about, you said you mentioned the word discipline, and that was one of the things that you were able to do to start writing and prolifically, I mean, and being a prolific writer and so forth. We talk about inspired actions a lot in coaching, and then there is that mixture of inspired actions and doing things that you just need to do, even if you're not inspired to do it at the moment. How do you navigate that?
Well, and again, maybe some of this comes from age. I'd use the term wisdom, but that's maybe applicable, maybe not. I think some of it is just because you've lived longer, you now have a broader picture, and you understand that there are times when sometimes you just have to do what is required. You just got to simply say, okay, I got to do it. You know, and I was telling somebody yesterday, I said one of the reasons, like, for example, we just did a new book that came out April 18th on my birthday, called Legacy of Leadership. And one of the things I talked about in there was accountability in terms of, you know, setting accountability and working with deadlines and working from the far out deadline backwards to where you are and, you know, scheduling things. And I said it just turned out to be really funny that after I got the book, I was rereading it and looking. We'd done the accountability, and I put, you know, do the proof, do this, send book to publisher April 2nd. And I looked back, and we'd actually done that on April 2nd.
Oh, wow.
Because we had done it, you know? Yeah. Like, it wasn't even conscious. It was just, because I had simply said, if I need this book in time to have it for release for this conference, leadership conference I was at on the 18th and 19th that weekend, I had to get it to the printer by a certain time so they could print it and then ship it. And we did that. It was just so funny to look at it and go, my goodness, I said it, and I did it.
That is awesome.
But some of that is just learning to work systematically and strategically, saying if it's kind of like, for example, if you were going to go on a cruise with Christine Marie and Julie and myself and some other people, and the cruise was going to be at a certain timeline, there would be certain things you'd have to put in your deadline. Okay, I need to book my tickets. I need to book my flights. You know, I need to make sure I have a passport, you know, those kinds of things. And so you would make your list and you'd work it through, because you wanted to be on that cruise.
Yeah.
That provides the motivation. If there's, like I tell people, very often if the motivation to succeed or the desire is strong enough, it'll overcome the fear.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. I really believe in that, what you just said, when the desire is strong enough to overcome the fear. Now, you know, like, when let's talk when you first started out, okay? When did you know that? Because, you know, like for us, our business, at some point you have to have help. Do you know what I mean? It's like you can't do it all. At one point did you know, wow, if I really want to do this, I need to, you know, have, unless you're still doing it all by yourself, I can't imagine that though, but, you know, I need to have a team to help me.
Okay, yeah. Well, I think the dream to do what I'm doing now actually started back in the mid-70s to be a professional speaker, travel the world and encourage people, that kind of stuff. And I sat on it for 20-some years. It just, you know, didn't happen. Life got in the way, whatever it was.
Right.
I went through a divorce in the 80s that in some ways was crushing. But in putting the pieces back together, this little piece came back. You know, I kind of figured, okay, if I'm reorganizing and refocusing and revamping my life, why don't I take a look at this? And so I chatted with a friend that I knew that was a member of the National Speakers Association, because we hadn't invented the Canadian one yet. And he was very kind. He had heard me speak in some of our business meetings. And he said, Bob, you know, why don't you join Toastmasters and hone your skills a bit before you try and be a professional? Which was a very nice thing to say and set me up to success. So I went, I joined, I practiced, I polished, I made a commitment. I realized early in my Toastmaster career, which was precedes this one, that if I was going to get good at this, it was going to be by doing it, that I would never turn down an opportunity to speak, and I very seldom did. And that's what I tell people. You learn to be a better speaker by speaking. I mean, you can buy the book or other people's books, and you can read them, which is great, but you're going to learn it by doing it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of it, is eventually you get to the point, and then somewhere along the line, I started doing the, like I was saying, I started doing the programs in the showroom when I was speaking, and it just evolved from there. And then then there was a time when I had a lady come up to me at a conference I was doing, and she said, you know, you look like you're so comfortable up there. You're having fun. Mm-hmm. And I said to her, I said, well, let me think. It's December. It's Cancun. I'm wearing makeup, and somebody's doing my hair because we were doing like a three-camera shoot, and I'm being paid to be here. Yeah, I think I'm having fun. But part of that was the fact that you had built up that comfort level of being in front of an audience. Because I get that even from my professional speaker friends. I was speaking in Toronto last September, and somebody came up to me who was a past president of our chapter in Toronto and said, Bob, you're just so comfortable up there. And I went, well, it's because I've been up there. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't get comfortable up there by sitting back in the audience. You can learn by being in the audience and watching other speakers and learning from them, or watching, if you go to Toastmasters, watching evaluators give feedback to a speaker and going, oh, that would work for me. Or, I have that challenge too. But you're going to get comfortable by doing it. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get to the point where you will become so comfortable at it that it's almost like what they call unconscious competence. It's kind of like my wife was saying with her baba making bread. She said, how do you do that? And she said, well, I just put a pinch of this and do this. Well, what's the rest? Well, I just learned to do it, to make bread. You know, it's not like a recipe.
It is like driving a car.
She probably learned that from her mom.
Driving a car. I was with a new driver today, and I was really aware of how deliberate she was at stopping and, like, looking right, looking left, looking left again. And it was like, oh, okay, this is what somebody new looks like. And, you know, give her a year or two, and then she'll be like everybody else. It's that be-do-have paradigm. You can't have Bob Hui's life, which is I'm a speaker, I'm a success speaker, and I travel the world, unless you be the speaker and you practice and you do the work and then you do it. So you be the speaker, you do it, you study it and do it, and then you get to have the rewards. And so
that's exactly how that works.
Yeah.
You know, it's
amazing how that works.
Well, you just keep doing it. I mean, you don't always do it well. But sometimes you can learn a lot from that, too, where you know, like I tell people, I mean, if you're out there doing it, you're still, even if you don't do it well, you're still doing something that the majority of people don't do.
Right.
So, but look at it and say, okay, what can I do next time? What can I do differently next time? And
exactly.
Each time you do it, you get better. Each time you take a step, it's kind of like when you're a little kid, and luckily your parents didn't slap you down and just say, you're never going to learn to walk, so we're just going to leave you in the corner. You know, I mean, eventually they get to the point where they can walk and they can run, and then you don't hear them, and as a parent you go, uh-oh, what's happening? It's silent.
Yes.
Because they've now learned to get out of your sight line. But that's the whole point. You know, you learn by doing, and that's the same thing with speaking. It's the same thing like I told the people yesterday in the publishing panel. I said, you learn to be a better writer by writing.
Yeah.
You know, my initial writing wasn't great. It needed a lot of editing. Now it doesn't need as much. You know, and part of that's because I've learned from my editors. You know, I've started seeing what I'm doing that they keep changing. Oh, maybe I should have the sentences shorter. Maybe I shouldn't use the periods and the commas in weird places and, you know, those kinds of things. It's the same thing with speaking. It's the same thing. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are in businesses and have careers. Similarly to what you're doing to be successful in your business or your career, you didn't learn it overnight. And it wasn't that you never made a mistake. The point being is that when you make a mistake or you do something, you leverage the learning. You take a look at it and say, okay, that didn't work, or that didn't work as well as I would hope. How can I change that for next time?
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully
Perfect.
It didn't stop them. And that's the key, is don't let it stop you.
And don't let it stop you. And then I love your line about leveraging it. you know, and the fact, you know, Bob, that you care about the audience. You say, what, you know, how do I give them quality? What, you know, what kind of content that can, like you said, even if one person, you know, walks away going, I needed that, you know. I love your sphere of influence, you know, and how that all works for you. So I just want to say thank you so much. This was a quick half hour.
Yes, and you can get Bob Hooley's book at successpublications.ca, successpublications.ca. It's Speaking for Success. Mm-hmm. Adding mastery to your message and power to your presentation. You know, Bob also has, which I love this idea, you have a boot camp for speakers.
You do.
I do.
And that's awesome.
And we,
so
we cater to cowards.
And we cater to cowards. I love it.
He is, Bob is the idea man. Bob, the idea man, yeah. Hooey. And we had a great
maybe
idea.
Maybe we could take the boot camp on the cruise.
That's it.
I love it.
We're gonna marry the boot camp. The boot camp. We'll call it the booty camp.
There you go.
Booty camp for cowards.
And you can also find out more about Bob Hooey right now at ideaman.net. Ideaman.net. So he's all over the place. So I want to say, Bob, thank you so much for being on Life with the Girlfriends today, and have a great, awesome end of your weekend.
Mine.
Thank you, Bob. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, and we'll talk offline about the cruise when we get a chance.
Yes, absolutely.
Lovely.
I'm serious.
All right,
I think that's
thank
a great
you so much.
Bet.
What an awesome interview with Bob Hooey. And, Mom, you were saying, is it, I go, Hooey? What was I
you
saying?
You were saying Huey.
Huey, that's right.
Yes.
I don't know why I was saying
I
that.
I don't know either. And then I was like, Julie, no, it's Hooey. It's Bob Hooey.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you so much. And we're just going to continue right on. Because our next interviewer, I mean, the person we're interviewing, I'm the interviewer.
Snap out of it, girlfriend.
Yes.
Snap out of it.
And I know I'm not saying her name wrong. At least I hope I'm not. But J.J. DiGeronimo. And, you know, we're talking about, this is really cool what we're talking about now, because we're talking about, you know, how to be a successful working woman, mother and wife, how to put all the pieces together. I mean, it's just, sometimes we get so...
Yes.
Overwhelmed.
Yes.
And
every sigh.
Yes.
This is crazy. This is nuts. How do they expect us to do it all?
Exactly. And I like because she talks about this. I want to talk to
you
her more about this, about having your all. And I love the way she put the twist on that. And not having all, but having your all. But her book is The Working Woman's GPS, When the Plan to Have It All Has Led You Astray.
No, really?
Yeah.
No, really?
How about really tired and depressed and dejected and like feeling like an absolute failure sometimes to have it all? So, JJ, are you on the line?
I am, and I'm smiling ear to ear.
Awesome! Awesome.
JJ, it's so wonderful to have you.
Thank you. And I'm so excited to be here.
I'm just going to you know, give you props right now. And I love your website, because purposefulwoman.com is your website. Great. You got a lovely picture of you there. I'm like, love the hair, girlfriend. Just want to say that's a lovely, I love your hair. But, you know, you're recognized for your success as an entrepreneur, technology executive, author, wife, and mother. And just a wife and mother is a lot sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But when you throw in author, everything else, you're just an amazing woman. You've worked in emerging technologies for over 20 years in the Silicon Valley. You know, you've just immersed yourself in leadership positions.
JJ, I just want to cry because I heard that you work in tech, and our websites got hacked this week. All of our websites did.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I know.
Mine
got hacked too, and my email and everything. And it, you know, with a good couple smart people, you'll get it cleaned up in no time. But it is frustrating, so I'm sorry to hear
it's
that.
It's so demoralizing. Yeah. Oh.
And because you wonder what was their purpose for, you know, hacking
into
Life of the Girlfriends. You know what?
Yeah.
You know, if there was some purpose, I would say I'd love to be hacked more often, but I just can't figure it out. So we really want to dive deep, JJ, into, you know, how women who are in have all these multiple roles in their lives, how they can succeed. So, you know, what are some formulas for women so that they can do less Because that's the thing.
Yes.
While achieving more.
Oh, yes.
Because we have a tendency to do a lot more and still achieve less.
Yeah, just kind of spinning our wheels.
Oh, sure, sure. And, you know, it's interesting because the things that you've read, all of those things I've been working on the last 20 years. So, you know, keeping it in perspective that, you know, every milestone has its objectives, every milestone has its tasks associated with. But when you look over a series of a life, you realize how much you can really accomplish.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And so my first tip to all women is, where are you starting from? Right, really get an assessment. This is the first part of the book, too, is get an assessment of where you're starting. What have you already committed to? What folks around you? What risks have you already taken? And where do you want to go? And then prioritizing what milestones you want to hit first, second, and third, and then strategically working towards those, using your network, using, you know, outsourcing tasks so that you have more time in your day. I talk to a lot of women about giving them permission is that you don't have to touch everything assigned to you. You can outsource. You can leverage other people in your life. Mm-hmm. And then working down that list. And this was something I had to teach myself, too, and this is why I wrote about it, because so many women get so frustrated in their own lives. But most of the time, all the reason is they've committed to so many things. And they will not give themselves permission to let go. Let go of things they don't need to touch anymore. Let go of relationships that are pulling them down. And then build themselves a list of goals and start working towards those step by step. Even if it takes you years, it's just working towards them is the objective.
I like what you're saying there.
You
get a snapshot of a lifetime. And then you go, wait a minute, I don't have to be everything today. And I can work on these three goals, all right, and pick the one first and get a plan for it. But, you know, in talking to you more about this idea of farming out or getting resources to help you and you don't have to touch everything, mm-hmm. you know, I keep thinking, why is it that we are so afraid to hire help? Because there's so many ways of hiring, even like Fiverr.com and all this stuff. And is it because we feel like it just won't help? That it would take more time. I mean, I have this problem as well, JJ. There are times when Christy Marie, my mama, is like, Julie, you need to get help. Do it. There's no reason why you shouldn't. And it's like, oh, by the time I asked for it, I could have it done myself.
Mm-hmm.
And also, that's not true.
You know, JJ, too, like when there were times in my life where I wanted some household help, you know. But then I spent, like, hours getting the house, like, clean so that somebody could come and clean it. It was, like, crazy. So there really is sort of this being willing to let go of some stuff.
It is. And I use so many seminars, and I love listening to Bob. I mean, just speaking and talking to women about what matters to them. And really getting to the heart of it is, you know, some women find cleaning extremely therapeutic. So I would say don't take that off your list. If you enjoy cleaning, keep that on your list. But if you hate grocery shopping, maybe hire your babysitter to go grocery shopping for you if she's of age or has a car. Or maybe ask your neighbor to go grocery shopping for you while she grocery shops and then flips her $20 or $30 so she can get her nails done. I mean, there's very creative ways of getting help.
Oh, that's exactly right. Those are both very good ideas because, like your babysitter, we're always like, oh, you can't, you know, have her do one more thing. The truth is, it's kind of fun to bring the kid to the grocery store and have them, like, look around and have fun and then to get to stuff. And it's like, it frees you up. And I think that's the biggest thing for our lovelies out there. And I know for me, too, is just say it's okay to ask for help. And then you're able to do what you need to do. And then it really does help everybody else around you. You know, you're able to support other women who are, or depending if you want to hire men or women, doesn't matter, but you're supporting other women, giving them more opportunity, and then you're also freeing yourself up. So as a woman who wants to do everything herself and has not done it well sometimes, I say take that leap and find some help. Find some help desperately. So thank you, JJ, for bringing that up. I really appreciate that.
And probably just
you know,
one other point I'd like to mention is that one other point that I think is important is that, first of all, minimum wage is under, you know, it depends on where you're living, but minimum wage varies. I mean, you don't have to pay that much to have someone do some help for you. And the thing is, I ask a lot of my friends who they use. I try to get references from people I know. And then sometimes I have my babysitter even come when she's not watching the kids to do laundry or fold. I really do not like folding laundry and putting it away. I can get it started, I can keep it going, but I don't like folding. And so my babysitter sometimes comes even when she doesn't need to watch the kids, just to take care of some stuff around the house. She loves it. She makes more than she'd make at Macy's. And I love it because I can focus on something else.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I love it. And there are nowadays, there's, you know, 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds who are really having a hard time finding, you know, work out there, who are great people that we know from our community. It's like, you know, I'd be willing to help, even for a couple hours here and there. So that's a good thing, good to know. So what is the criteria, though, to eliminate these unnecessary commitments? Because I know that as women we tend to say yes to a lot more things than we need to say yes to. How do we eliminate these things?
So, very good question, and in fact, such a good question that I actually have just written another chapter in another book for Confidence for Women, because so many women struggle. In fact, when I just did 3 seminars this week for women, and each one I asked, how many of you have taken on a new commitment this week? Almost 80% of the class and 80% of the group of women have taken on a new responsibility. And I said, how many of those that have taken on a commitment, how many have taken on a commitment that's going to further your goals?
Mm.
And very few raise their hand.
Oh my gosh.
That is a huge question.
Wow.
How many of you have taken on a commitment that will further your goal? That's a great question.
So it's really, you know, the one thing is, as women, is we have to be clear on what we want to accomplish, right? So we need to know what our shortlist is. And then when we're asked a task, or to take on something new, or take on a new project or work, or maybe take something on in the community, I always give myself 24 hours and encourage women to do the same thing. Because when you get 24 hours, you start asking yourself questions such as, how will this further my goals? What things do I have to push aside to make this happen? Do I have all the information? Who are the deciding factors? And when you start to ask yourself all these questions, which are also in the book, you start to think, heck, I am not the right person for this task. And you give yourself the confidence because you're clear on what you want to accomplish. And it gives women more permission to say no.
Mm-hmm. Am I the right person for that task? Beautiful.
Right. And now we got to, so that's the first part, right, is understanding who's asking, why they're asking, and doesn't align to your goals. The second part is you have to realize there's going to be guilt. If you think you're not going to have guilt, you are crazy. All successful women have guilt. There's no way you could possibly be everywhere that's expected of you every single day. And so I always say embrace the guilt. When you are powerful in your own skin, you get stuff done, people are going to want you on their projects. And to be feeling guilty is only pulling you down. So just embrace the guilt and realize, I can't do this right now. In a work environment, I always tell folks, in a work environment, you could always ask your boss, thank you for this responsibility, but what responsibility are you going to take off my plate? Because I can't possibly fold this in with everything else I have, so can you help me prioritize?
Wow. Very good. Yeah, great point.
That's a great point. And then, I want to say, too,
I could talk about this for hours. Can you tell?
Yeah, and you know what? I love women with enthusiasm. Awesome, you know.
Absolutely.
I love that. And I was just thinking about that question, you know, what will you take off my plate? Because as women start, we get to know our field more, we get to have more and more success, there really are things that we're doing that really should be given to the next generation so that they can then step in to their power and start the plan as well. And there are probably things that we're doing that just like, you know what, we're not in alignment with them anymore. They're like maybe like the first milestone or the first tier, and we need to just go, okay, you know, I can do it really well because I've done it well for a long time.
Oh, I see where you're going with this, girlfriend.
Oh, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. Sometimes I have thoughts in my mind that I'm just not sure I'm ready to say yet. But when we're live.
You're formulating it.
Yeah. But as we're live, I just say I'm going to throw it out there and see what sticks.
Just like spaghetti.
Just like spaghetti. Exactly. So, okay, so I didn't want to interrupt you, JJ. So we talked about, you know, is this the right goal for you? Or does this commitment get us to...
And to embrace the guilt. Amen to that.
Is there anything else we need to do to figure out what is unnecessary?
So I do a chart. It's in the Working Woman's GPS, and I essentially put all the things I'm committed to, who requested me to do this, and it could be me, but, you know, sometimes it's family members, sometimes it's people in the community, people at work, who requested it, me to do it. how long does it take me to do? So generally it's, you know, how long does it take me to do? Does it align to my goals? And so I make the four columns out, and I start to list out. When I started this process, I listed out absolutely everything I was committed to. And I had to make a weekly chart, a monthly chart, a quarterly chart, because not all my responsibilities hit every day. Wow. And when you start to look at it on paper, I mean, first I started to cry, I think. I poured myself a big glass of wine, and then I started to say, okay, I have to get some of these things off my list because I'm up while everyone's sleeping. I am having very little joy in my life because I'm so overcommitted.
Right.
Exactly.
And so I started to work it off my list. I said, you know, can I give this to somebody else, to your point earlier, can I give this responsibility to someone else, or can I end this commitment? Or if I have to keep this commitment and it's not aligned to my goals, when can I get it off my list?
Mm-hmm. Right. That's a good point. And I want to say, it doesn't serve anybody to have a commitment or say yes to commitment when you really can't fulfill it and help yourself. I mean, like, or be, it throws yourself and your
family. Well, like JJ said, she's lost the joy.
Yeah, you lost the joy. It serves nobody then if you lose your joy. So we say yes to more joy. I don't want anybody to commit themselves if they're not having joy in their life.
Mm.
So I think
JJ, what inspired you, though, to write you know, the working woman GPS, you know, when the plan to have it all leads you astray?
So there were so many things that sort of pushed me over the edge to write the book. Everybody seems to want to write a book. I thought I would do it sometime in my 40s. But, you know, I hired a career coach, and she had me write my 70-year bio. And even though I was opposed to doing it because I already had so many commitments that week to do, I did open up a Word document and write it. And I realized that one of my passions is empowering women. And I wasn't doing many things to do that. And the thing I could do was start writing. And so that was the catalyst.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that I had a mere breakdown myself because all those great things on my bio I love, but I had very little joy. I was getting very little sleep, very little joy, and I frankly could not. I really was just spinning out of control. And I started to interview successful women, asking them, how are you keeping this together? What memo did I miss? Because I'm losing my mind.
Yes.
And so I know I wanted to write some stuff down. I started doing these interviews of women, and it just seemed to be the synergy. And it was a two-year process.
Yeah, a two-year process. I mean, that's the thing. Now, when you wrote your bio, it was like your future 7-year bio. It was like your future self in some sense.
At 70 years old, yes.
That's awesome.
Oh, it's 70.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 70 years old, what is your bio? And
okay,
it's so interesting because it helps you prioritize your goals.
Wow.
There are so many lovelies out there right now that we have, when we see ourselves at 70 and look back, we go, that's the thing I really wanted to focus on.
Right.
And somehow it's that one thing that we never get to. It's the last on our list. It's like we're busy living our life. What is that one Beatles song? John Lennon sings it. It's a famous line. I can't think of it now. But we're busy living our lives or trying to plan our lives, and life happens. I can't say it any better than they can say it. But you're right. It's like there are things that we want to do. And once you have it on paper, I think it's a really good process is to go and see at 70, where would you want to be? That's an awesome process. I'm glad you took the time to do that.
Yes.
Put it on your commitment list.
I think we should try that.
Exactly, exactly. Now, in your book, you talk about mentors and sponsors. What are they, and, you know, how can using them benefit our lives?
It's a great question. And, again, another thing that I find that women really need to be proactive in is getting a good sphere of influence around them, folks that will help catapult them forward. Back to the earlier point is understanding what your goals are, help you understand the gaps in your own sphere, what types of people, what types of expertise do you need around you.
Mm-hmm.
Even though having, in many of our cases, our mother, our friends, a lot of times we need somebody that has an expertise that we don't currently have. And so we only know that if we're very clear on what we're trying to accomplish. And I think getting those goals straight and then looking at the people that you pick up the phone to call
and I, there's different folks you call for different things. I have a group of people I call for my technology. I have a group of people I call for my women. And I have a group of people I call for things that happen at home.
Right.
And so keeping track of who you call is important.
Yes. And I want to say, too, because we were talking about this with Bob Hui previously, is this, we have, Christy and I have been playing with this idea about having a virtual mastermind group where it's, because sometimes you don't know people and you want to know them in the future and are now, and but, you know, who are your mentors that you'd like to go to that would help you? Like, you know, like JJ, she can be in my virtual, my mastermind group. I would go to her, and I'm like, what would JJ say if, you know, I'm feeling overwhelmed, overworked? And, you know, you're like, oh, listen to this interview. I know she would say, well, why don't you put out, list all the commitments that you have.
Mm-hmm.
Which ones are in line with your goals?
Well, I think, too, like mentors,
yeah.
You know, they're, you know, like, you know, a girlfriend, she's going to try and comfort you and make you feel better. Like JJ said, you have a glass of wine or whatever. But mentors kind of kick your butt sometimes.
Mm-hmm. They really do. And they, and mentors and sponsors are going to change based on where you are and where you want to go. And, you know, asking somebody who's already there is a great idea.
Yeah.
And I just want to clarify on mentors and sponsors. So mentors are someone who just gives you advice. When you call, they just give you ideas and advice. A sponsor is actually somebody who will talk on your behalf when you're not there. So if you're at a community group and they say, well, who do you think wants to lead this? And your sponsor knows you're interested, they'll throw your name in the hat. In a work environment, oftentimes they discuss who they're going to interview. Your sponsor would throw your name in the hat. People who promote you when you're not there are sponsors. And I really call them, I build advisory boards of people for different initiatives in my life, and they're made up of mentors and sponsors.
Hmm. Thank you for clarifying that. I actually, that sort of really, you know, opens my mind a bit to hear that word sponsor, and to know that they'll speak for you and be on your side.
And I want to say to lovelies out there, there's times where you're like, well, how do I find someone who will do that? Like law of attraction with anything, what you give is what you get. You know, start thinking about who you can sponsor yourself. Who are the people that you think do their jobs amazingly? And when an opportunity comes up, you know, start spreading the word. And then start spreading the word that you're, hey, I'm really good at this. I can do this. You know, if you see a need for someone, give them my name. Really, it's just about knowing what you can do, knowing who you are, where you're heading, and let people know that, hey, if you like what I'm doing, please let somebody know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm sure that there's a lot more to it than that, but here's just my take on it in some sense.
Yeah.
Now, is that all the information in your book, JJ, The Working Woman's GPS, about sponsors and mentors?
Along with 12 energizing steps to really get yourself motivated to make that leap.
Hmm. Cool. What would you think, if you were going to tell the lovelies right now, it's like, okay, I want you to take away from this interview is this one thing, what would it be?
I would say for anybody listening that's looking to make a transition, that there has to be a lot of work and effort put into where you are with a clear understanding of where you want to go and preparing yourself for that leap. And I think the book, The Working Woman's GPS, really is a workbook to help you get prepared so that when you start running, you can make it to the other side.
And it all does take work. I mean, and it can be fun work. I mean, when you are working on yourself, sometimes it's not easy to do that. Sometimes we want to be busy just because we don't want to look at ourselves. And I say, lovelies out there, do it. We can look at ourselves again, figure out where we want to go.
Yes.
And yes, there's fear.
Yeah, we call it being conscious, but JJ calls it being purposeful, being on purpose. Her purposefulwoman.com and The Working Woman's GPS. Can they get that at your website, or can they get it on Amazon? Or
they can get it. Sure, they can get it on the website. They can get it on Amazon, and a great place to keep the conversation going is on the fan book page, Purposeful Woman.
Okay, awesome.
Oh.
Is that on Facebook then, or that's on Facebook,
yep.
Right?
Yep. Okay, Purposeful
great.
Woman is on Facebook.
Great. Now, I know that you have free training possibly coming. I see on your website that's coming on.
Mm-hmm.
Is that any time in the near future?
Sure. Sure. So we have a training that starts every week on enhancing your professional brand through social media. That's a free training and actually available right now. If folks want to write down this URL, they can get this, and it comes with a 15-page workbook to really enhance your professional brand. The website is mysocialbrand.net/. Yeah, mysocialbrand.net/replay and the number 2.
Awesome.
Replay number 2. I'm going to look at that.
Yeah, definitely, definitely, definitely.
And for those listening in, they can text the word brand to 58885. That's 58885 to download the workbook.
Oh, that's so awesome. That is really cool.
That's cool. I don't know how that works just quite yet, but I'm curious.
That's so cool.
On the text side. So you can go either of those two places. You can text the word brand to 58885 or go to I don't know what it is. I forgot what
my,
it is.
Sure.
Oh,
you my go social, to my social brand.
Yes. Thank you. mysocialbrand.net/replay2. Thank
yes.
you so much. I just want to say thank you so much, JJ, for being on Life with a Girlfriend tonight. You have really opened my eyes to this idea that I don't have to say yes to all the commitments that come our way. And
to embrace your guilt. I love that. It's going to come anyway, right, JJ?
It is, and you'd be amazed. People, if they really want you, they'll ask multiple times. So sometimes you increase your political capital by saying no more often.
How true.
Thank you so much.
How true.
All right, JJ, thank you so much for being on Life with a Girlfriend. Have an awesome, awesome rest of your
thanks,
weekend.
Thanks, JJ. Really appreciate
thank
you.
Love
hearing
you.
Me.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Two wonderful, yeah. wonderful
oh,
interviews.
JJ was awesome.
Yeah, we had Bob Kiwis.
I did it again.
I know. Hey, Geronimo. And I want to say hello to everyone out there.
Yes. Can we say hello to Massachusetts?
Yes, FRC Radio Massachusetts. And awesome, awesome time. And girlfriend, let's go out and sing our song,
yes.
won't you?
Yes.
Everybody needs.
We've got to learn this song, girlfriend.
A good girlfriend. Come out at night. Everybody needs a good girlfriend to make the wrong seem right. Everybody needs.
Go ahead, girlfriend.
A good girlfriend.
Yes.
Oh, it's down there now. It's playing. Woohoo. Everybody needs a good girlfriend to make the wrong seem right.
Okay. Promise us we're
going to
get this right next time.
Exactly. Have a great day, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Go to our Twitter page at Prosperity Duo.
Yes.
LifeOfTheGirlfriends.com. Not yet, though, because it's been hacked. Have
it
a great night.
Hacked, yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Massachusetts. We love you.